Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. There's J.J. McCarthy getting the phone call. Not his twin brother pretending to be him, but actually J.J. McCarthy getting the call from the Vikings. 10th overall pick in the draft. The Vikings moved up. Not as far as we thought they were going to. There was talk of them going as high as 3, maybe 4, maybe 5. Instead, they go from 11 to 10. When I saw yesterday that the Jets were talking to someone about trading out of 10, I thought that someone was jumping the Vikings for J.J. McCarthy. As it turns out, the Vikings came up one spot. They gave up 4th-round pick, 5th-round pick to get the 10th overall pick and a 7th-rounder from the Jets to ensure that they get the guy they wanted in J.J. McCarthy. Now, I think they really wanted Drake May. The question was, if they can't get May, are they content to take one of the other guys? And I think, you know, the comments last week from Kevin O'Connell that he's been the quarterback killer. He's been the guy who said, I don't want this guy, I don't want that guy. I just wondered how many of these guys this year, once you get past Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, how many of those guys were okay with Kevin O'Connell? Clearly McCarthy was one of them.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you get J.J. McCarthy, and, you know, I talked to Jason Garrett last week, and he said one of the things you always have to do when you evaluate these quarterbacks coming out is – some of the other quarterbacks you might have in your building, a veteran, whether it was the Giants with Daniel Jones or it's Minnesota with Sam Darnold, is these quarterbacks aren't old enough that you can just say they're just old veterans like a Sam Darnold. But sometimes you have to look back and say, all right, if J.J. McCarthy and Sam Darnold came out in the same draft class, how would we evaluate them when they were coming out as prospects? And you don't know, like Sam Darnold could have been the guy that you said, hey, he has all the tools. We would have taken him over J.J. McCarthy. And I think Minnesota's in a unique position because Sam Darnold's the guy that we spoke about earlier, gets drafted to the Jets and really didn't have a setup where you're like, man, he can go and be successful there. They were a bad team. They had a lot of holes on the team. He comes in and it just continues. We, you know, we were playing him twice a year and nothing really changed. It was just, it was always bad for the guy. So then he now goes to San Francisco, first at Carolina, and is like, all right, he looks a little bit better. You're seeing some of those tools that he had coming out. So now you get him and J.J. McCarthy, and if Kevin O'Connell was in love with Drake May, and he just was like, hey, you know, I like J.J. McCarthy, or, you know, I love him a little bit, but I'm not in love. I think now Minnesota has the opportunity to say, okay, we still have a veteran in Sam Darnold. They can compete. Obviously, J.J. McCarthy, where you drafted him, people are going to want to see him play. But I think if they feel like to start the season, he's not there yet, and Sam Darnold can go out there and win some games, I think they can create this little buzz about, hey, we're going to let him sit a little bit. We're going to, you know, bring him along. But if they fall in love and Sam Darnold is able to showcase those skills, then it helps you. It helps you make those decisions. So I'm very interested to see because I think Kevin O'Connell, obviously his relationship, him and Jerod Mayo were drafted in the same year. I think he put that call in. I think Minnesota ultimately was like, hey, we don't want to give up so much of our franchise. You know, New England's the number 3 pick. They haven't had the number 3 pick in years. I don't know if they've ever had the number 3 pick. So I think for them, it was like, only way we get out of this pick is if you give us, yeah, those two first round picks sound good, but how about Darisol or how about Justin Jefferson? And there's no way Minnesota is going to do that. So I do wonder, like you mentioned, how much they love J.J. McCarthy, but I think they feel good about this quarterback room with Kevin O'Connell, that either guy that plays, he can coach them up and he can get them in the right situation, make the right plays out there to be a good football team. And I think J.J. McCarthy, his ability to run a little bit too, will help him when he gets out there and if he has to play.
The Sam Darnold angle is very interesting because he still does have what's regarded as a high-end skill set. The 49ers loved him. He didn't get a chance to play last year. At one point, it looked like he was going to because Brock Purdy got a concussion in that Monday night loss to the Vikings. He turned it around somehow and got cleared to play 6 days later. They lost at home to the Bengals, but it was never Darnold on the field. 2 years ago, when there was talk about Kenny Pickett possibly going to the Panthers, they ended up drafting Matt Corral that year, and he's in the UFL now. But one of Sim's points was, you know, when Kenny Pickett shows up for offseason workouts and he starts throwing the ball and Darnold starts throwing the ball, everybody's going to say Darnold's better. And so that's the challenge for J.J. McCarthy. He's got to come out there and he's got to prove to his teammates eventually, if not sooner, that he is better than Sam Darnold. And until then, they've got a guy in Sam Darnold that can run the offense. And, hey, Nick Mullins had 400 passing yards in Kevin O'Connell's offense last year. Nick Mullins. So it's going to be, you know, good problem to have, I guess, if Darnold is getting it done and winning games and McCarthy is getting himself seasoned. But, you know, as I say with all these guys, and this is why the Falcons approach kind of defies modern logic. If you think enough of a player to make him a top 10 pick in this day and age, get him on the field. Don't put him on ice. Otherwise, take somebody else who's going to be out there and play it right now, because it is a right now league. It is a not build for the future league. It is right now, right now, right now. And we'll see what the Vikings do right now between Darnold and McCarthy. Let's hear from Kevin O'Connell from last night after they took J.J. McCarthy 10th overall on what stood out to him during the time he spent before the draft with the former Michigan quarterback.
Ultimately, being able to see him kind of take information directly from me in an install setting and see him take it out to the field was really, really encouraging, for what that may mean for his development and the process that now we get to go through together. And I think throughout these last few weeks here, you know, you build relationships with some of these guys, and absolutely did so with JJ. And I know he really wanted to be a Minnesota Viking, and I know there's, you know, hopefully as excited as our fans are, they can know that J.J. McCarthy really wanted to be a Minnesota Viking, and he cannot wait to get here and get to work.
That's one of the great realities of the draft. They all say the right thing because they have to. You don't want to alienate the entire fan base, but you can tell by some of the reactions and the way they say it. Just like with Jaden Daniels saying, I'm happy to go wherever I'm picked. That's code for, man, I really wish the Commanders would take me, but there's not a damn thing I can do about it because I want those fans to buy my jerseys. So, and I'm stuck. I got no other option unless I sit out the whole year and re-enter the draft. So if it's true that J.J. McCarthy really wants to be a Minnesota Viking, that's a plus. And whatever his ceiling is, and nobody ever knows what a guy's ceiling is going to be when they come out of college, because you went through the transition. You go from college-level competition to the best of the best that college football has had to offer for the past 10 years, as honed by competition against each other all the time. You've really got to step it up to hit that high ceiling, and we'll find out whether or not he does it. But whatever it is, whatever that limit is for J.J. McCarthy, he's going to get there with Kevin O'Connell.
And I think exactly what you said is true. You're now taking whatever you did in college, and for some of these guys who were in college for a while, you're now 23, 22 years old, and you're competing against some of these guys who are going to be 18, 19. That's not happening anymore. You're in the NFL, and that's the scary thing about a top 10 pick not playing right away, because now you're pushing off the time that you get to see, is this guy going to be the guy that we think he is? So if it doesn't happen for two more years, and now you find out that top 10 pick isn't good, now you're like, wow, we wasted a pick. And then it took us now 4 years or whatever of getting no production from him really to see if he was worthy of that pick. That's a scary feeling. And your fan base hates that. And that's, I think, what everybody has to go against. I know every coach says they don't care about the fan base. They don't care. They only care about what's best. You have to care because your owner cares about that. Your owner cares about people coming to the games and buying jerseys, all that stuff. So I do think for Minnesota, they're going to want J.J. McCarthy out there. And I think Kevin O'Connell said it. And I will say this about McCarthy. He did look excited. He looked ready to go when that draft pick came in. No hesitation. He skull clapped right away. I'm sure you were sitting in the living room and, or watching the draft and you're like, yeah, he skull clapped. But you being you was like, well, I don't know if this is the guy for us. So
you don't know that.
But it will be. And I think that excitement helps because most of Washington knows Jaden Daniels probably didn't want to. Those stories don't come out for no reason that supposedly the agent said he doesn't want to be. Like that stuff, when it comes out, there's some truth to that. And, you know, you don't want that, but you understand, hey, we're going to pay this kid money to be here. We just want his best. Whether he wants to be here or not, we don't really care. But I think it does help. I think the energy and everything around McCarthy seems like he wants to be there. And I mean, you see what Kevin O'Connell did. If I'm J.J. McCarthy, should I want to be there too? I want to play for you. You're going to make me look probably a little bit better than what I really am, and I'll take that any day of the week.
I would venture any of those guys at the top of the quarterback class this year would have wanted to go there if they could, including Caleb Williams.
Yep.
Because you have guy that is going to be there your entire career. Head coach, late 30s, he's going to be there for 15 to 20 years, especially if you guys are successful together and you don't have to go through the transition. Different offensive coordinator this year. Then I do great in that offense. Yep. He gets a head coaching job. Different offensive coordinator next year. Got to make the adjustment again. Eventually you get a guy that can't get it done. And, oh, what's wrong with you? You stink now. Well, it's not me. It's the offense. But you can't come out and say that. McCarthy's not going to have that issue at all. One of the interesting angles, Devin, that came up last night, and Adam Schefter said this right around the time the Chargers made their pick at number 5. And the background to all this is McCarthy really hit the middle of the radar screen for a lot of people once Jim Harbaugh, the former Michigan coach, now the Chargers coach, was on with Colin Cowherd saying he'll be the first overall pick in the draft. When it's all said and done, J.J. McCarthy will be the first overall pick in the draft. Well, he was off by 9 picks, but it kind of, you know, injected McCarthy into the upper echelon of the quarterback class. And then coaches got involved in reviewing the college film. And once they get into the scouting, it supplements what the scouts have already done. And McCarthy goes up and up and up. The Patriots and the Vikings reportedly, and I think part of this is, let's see how serious Harbaugh really is about McCarthy. They called up and said, hey, is Justin Herbert available? And it's click. Also, yeah, you love J.J. McCarthy, but you don't love him so much that you would want to draft him for yourself and offload Justin Herbert, which really isn't a surprise. It would have been like a $63 million cap acceleration to trade Justin Herbert because they just paid him last year. But the Patriots and the Vikings, two teams that emerged with quarterbacks, made the phone call. And why wouldn't you at least make the call? Let's just see how serious Jim Harbaugh is about J.J. McCarthy. And that's part of it, too. You know, because if they had hesitated at all or entertained it at all, then he really does believe in J.J. McCarthy. It isn't just doing a favor for his former quarterback and trying to get four quarterbacks off the board in the first four picks.
It would have been interesting if the response would have been, let me talk to the cap guy just to figure out what that would even look like. That would have been interesting if that would have rumored. And, you know, I'm sure they were like, we can't do that because the last thing we ever want is Justin Herbert to think that we even thought about trading him. That's the rumor mill that you have to try to balance. But yeah, if I'm Minnesota and I'm the Patriots, there's no doubt in my mind I'm calling because Justin Herbert's a stud. You watch him out there and it's a clear difference of what he was able to do in the NFL compared to just what McCarthy did in college of being able to throw the ball, move the offense up and down the field with your arm. So I thought the whole time, and I appreciate Jim Harbaugh, what he did. I think he really does believe in McCarthy. I think he took it to whole new heights, greatest pro days ever seen, number one overall pick. I think that was a little bit of, I really like this kid. What he's about day in and day out, his leadership, all of those different things. Now, he doesn't have the skill set to be the number one guy, or he's not better than the guy I have here. But I think Harbaugh knew people respect what he sees, what he was able to do coming into San Francisco, winning right away, going to Michigan, ultimately creating a winner and winning a national title there. So I think he did. I think he's like, you know, let's ramp this up. And I do. I think overall, when we first kind of ended that college football season, it was like J.J. McCarthy's a winner. He's a good quarterback. You can put him in your system. He'll be able to run the system. But it was like, you know, he's not really a top 10 pick. That's not what you – And then out of nowhere, it was like, this guy might go third. He might go fourth. So I say huge shout out to Harbaugh for getting all of that kickstarted, getting it going. But again, I think it all comes back to, I think both of us believe McCarthy will have a chance to have success. And, you know, too bad for, you know, all my New England Patriot people. I would have loved to see Justin Herbert in that New England Patriots jersey. It would have been pretty cool to see.
One of the big smoke screens pre-draft became obvious last night as well when the Giants passed on J.J. McCarthy. They led people to believe they were in on McCarthy. It was to obscure their interest in Drake May. It came down to the Giants or the Vikings trading up to number three with the Patriots to get Drake May. At the end of the day, they didn't make the offer that would get the Patriots to say. And I kind of thought the Patriots were posturing to get the best possible offer they could because they knew they could put their thumbs on the scale to get more because especially the Vikings were very desperate to get in position to get Drake May. Patriots decide we're taking Drake May. A lot of pressure on Drake May. Still in the shadow of Tom Brady, and the fans will generally know, yeah, we could have traded that pick and gotten a lot of stuff to help make the team better. Yeah. Drake May's got to come in and prove it, and there's a lot of concerns about consistency and accuracy. Chris Sims had him at sixth of all the top quarterbacks, and we'll see what Alex Van Pelt, who got fired by the Browns as offensive coordinator, he's one of these, this churn of offensive coordinators who get passed around the league, get fired one place, hired another place, he's going to be the guy responsible for getting the most out of Drake May.
Yeah, it definitely will be interesting, and I think – not only in the shadow of Tom Brady, now you're in the shadow of the top 15 pick in Mac Jones, who goes as a rookie. The team gets 10 wins as rookie year, go out, make the playoffs. He ends up becoming an alternate in the Pro Bowl. And it was like, wow, they found the next guy. And then you see the way that whole thing crumbles. So now you have two of these things to think about. If you're Drake May, you have to think about Tom Brady, the best quarterback of all time, and then Mac Jones, really in the modern day New England history, was like this huge failure of what they thought it could be. So, and I think when you watch the game, I had one of my friends from New England who was a fan. He's like a huge diehard fan. He was like, I don't know about Drake May. He was like, he gives me Mac Jones vibes. And I'm like, I don't know. I think you just think that because he's another white quarterback coming to New England following Brady. So I don't think it's like you see Drake May, you see Mac Jones. But I do think for Drake May, that pressure is going to be there because, for one, you're the number three pick, and this franchise has been looking since Tom Brady left for that guy. So you have to now come out there. You're not going to be throwing the ball to some stud all-pro wide receiver. They don't have that. Last year, their offensive line was a mess. Couldn't protect Mac at all. Couldn't protect Zappy at all. So now you come in there. There's no influx of talent that's coming in. And I think one of the things that New England had to like about him is his time at North Carolina. He wasn't sitting there throwing to a bunch of All-Americans. Yeah, they had Walker in there as a good receiver. And I think he'll be a good receiver in the NFL as well. But that's one guy. He didn't have all of these weapons all around him. So he had to do some things. So I think they have to feel like if we can do a better job of protecting them and scheme-wise, and maybe he can be a little bit more consistent. Maybe his footwork can be better. Let's slow things down for him. And I think they also have Jacoby Brissett in there that he can watch Jacoby, see what Jacoby does. Jacoby's been in multiple places, played for different offensive coordinators. Jacoby likes Alex Van Pelt. And I'll tell people, I'm pretty close with Jacoby. He usually doesn't like his coach. He usually doesn't like his quarterback coach. His coordinator. He's usually one of those guys who, I'm like, Jacoby, you don't like anybody. And I called him when Van Pelt was to New England. And I was like, hey, I'm probably going to be on a radio show or something. Do you like this guy? When he was like, I really like this guy. So I wasn't surprised when they went and got Jacoby because of his relationship with coaches. So I think May will get to learn a little bit from him. I think Jacoby will help him out. And then if Jacoby plays to start the season, we'll see. You know, number three pick is going to be hard to do that. But I think that'll help him out a little bit because he's going to need to hit. In New England, they've been waiting for this guy to come in and hit. And they're going to expect big things from Drake May.
And number three was the highest pick the Patriots have had during Robert Kraft's time as owner of the team. He got the team in 94. It was in 93 that Drew Bledsoe was the first overall pick, and Bill Belichick inherited Bledsoe, didn't bring Bledsoe in, and that created that whole transition from Bledsoe to Brady. But three overall, the highest they've ever been, and they don't want to be there again because you don't.
Exactly.
Unless you trade up. Unless you get there through a trade you made the prior year like the Bears did, you don't get that high because you're a good football team. Here is Gerard Mayo, the new Patriots coach, on the question of whether or not Drake May will start right away for the Patriots.
I don't think many rookies are ready to just jump in and play. And look, at the end of the day, our philosophy is the best players will play. And, you know, coming in as a rookie, hopefully he's a sponge. There are a lot of good players in that locker room. And look, Jacoby, he understands. Like, he's a mentor. He's very smart, has great leadership skills, and hopefully Drake can learn something from him as well. But I would say, like, we're going to compete all spring. We're going to compete during training camp, and the best player will start.
Competition, competition, competition. That's the way to go. Best player will start, although if it's close, the edge is probably going to go to the guy in whom they've made the major investment. Also because, Devin, I'm a big believer, as I said earlier, if you're going to make a guy a pick that high, get him on the field. Otherwise, take somebody else who will get on the field. But for a quarterback especially, there's value in the reps, in seeing as quickly as possible. You know, you get to the point eventually where Tom Brady was, where Patrick Mahomes is trying to get, where you walk up to the line of scrimmage and you know exactly what's going to happen. You don't get to that point. You don't commence that process if you're on the sideline and not out there under center.
Yeah, and those reps are key, whether it's practice, whether it's game, preseason game. Like, you need every single rep. Are game reps better? No doubt about it. Joint practice reps are better than regular practice reps. But for a young guy, you need every single rep you can get. There's no, like, I can only take these reps over there. But I do think, and I love what Mayo said, is you have to create competition. You can't bring in, I know when you draft guys high, that they're going to play and they should play and everybody wants to see him play, but you got to have some competition. I talked to Jacoby last year in Washington, and what he said he hated the most was, he said it was never a competition between him and Sam Howell. He never got any opportunity to really play. It was always Howell's job. And then later in the season, Jacoby gets in and it's like, oh, this guy's pretty good. Like, he's helping us. We're moving the ball better. He's giving us a chance to actually win some of these games. And then you sit there and you say, like, wow, like, what if they would have started the season with this guy and Sam Howell would have got to see things kind of operate a certain way if he was better than Sam Howell to start the season? I do agree with you. If it's close, back to when we had Cam Newton and Mac Jones, when you were in practice and offenses were moving, and I think it was a little skewed because Cam Newton creates a different element when you're going full speed and it's tackle and it's live because of his running ability. But in practice, just moving, call it 7-on-7 or team drills, it felt neck and neck. And I think when you do have that, you let the young guy play, because at the end of the day, if the young guy's not that good by week 3, by week 16, he's going to be better because he got all of those reps. So you do that. But I think when you watch, and you have to be very honest with yourself early in the season, if you're watching and you're just like, this guy's not ready to play. And Coach Belichick said it last night on the McAfee show. He said, if the guy's not ready to play, especially at quarterback, the worst thing you can do is put him out there and then have to bring him back off and take him off the field. Because then once that happens, his confidence is shot. Everybody around now has that doubt. Is this guy the guy? So I think all these teams, especially in New England, I think they have to be careful. Do they have an offensive line that can really keep him upright? Can they protect him? Can they stop some of the bad habits that he kind of created at North Carolina? Can they prevent some of those from happening with other guys around him doing their job at a high level? Because if you can't do that, Jacoby Brissett's whole life has been in those situations. When you're a guy that's not a franchise quarterback, you usually end up playing in all of the really bad situations. Offensive line stinks, or this team's in between trying to get another quarterback next year. So you get out there and you just deal with what you deal with. He's been in those situations. He knows how to adapt and adjust. So I think they're going to have to be really smart of not just sending Drake May out there out there to die and get killed play after play after play. You have to make the right decision.
That's an excellent point, though. It's easy to go from the veteran to the rookie. Once you have the guy out there, you can't hook you can't pull him off. You can't say, we're doing revolving doors. You need to take a break. We're going to put you back out there. Maybe like that puts a stench on a guy that everyone can detect. And it's so hard to overcome that. You're right.
Exactly.
When he's out there, he's there. It's his job. And there's no turning back. And we're doing everything we can to get him to that ceiling. That's what the challenge is for all these guys, get them to their ceiling. We're going to take a break when we return. Final quarterback thoughts from last night, including the last guy taken, still 12th overall, with a coach who's going to get him to his ceiling. We'll talk Bo Nix and more right after this.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Nunez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history.
His calling card.
And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA and Peacock.
We felt like the Giants were the Joker team in that there were three teams at the front that needed quarterbacks, right? We all knew those three teams, Chicago, Washington, New England. And then we knew there was the second stretch of Minnesota, Denver, and the Raiders. And so, man, we kept, are the Giants going to take one of you? Because that then impacted how the last three were going to be. And so when they didn't, you know, I think I said to George, I think we think Minnesota likes McCarthy. We think, we don't know this, we think the Raiders like Penix and we like Nix. Let's get on a conference call with all of them and say, just no one spend any money. We think we know this. And then Atlanta took Penix, and then now all of a sudden, you know, we're paying attention to the team behind us, and it got a little a little crazy there for a minute.
That's Sean Payton talking about the quarterback process last night. You know, I think they put out a little smoke screen on J.J. McCarthy. Peyton Manning talked earlier this week on one of the local radio stations in Denver how much the Broncos like McCarthy, and Sims and I were trying to go how many levels deep we could on what Peyton was trying to do. But they could have gone up to get McCarthy if they really wanted McCarthy. I think it was Nix all along. That's what Sims was saying. Nix was the perfect quarterback for Sean Payton to run the offense the way he wants. And you think about the fact that, and this is nothing against Russell Wilson, he just didn't fit with the way Sean Payton runs his offense. Yep. And so when you have a guy who is the complete non-fit for what you do, you're going to do everything you can to get the next guy who's going to come in and be that fit. And it was Nix. And, you know, they were thinking, well, maybe they trade down and get him later, trade back into round one. They didn't want to play games there. Let's take him. Let's not screw around. Let's not lose him because we got cute. Let's just call the ball. Let's submit the pick and let's get it done.
Yeah. Coach Dungy, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the draft and he said, that's the key. He said they knew one year that they wanted Bob Sanders and they were able to trade back a little bit. And he wanted to trade back again. And Bill Polian was like, go sit down. Like, this is the guy we want. Let's go get him. And because that's what it comes down to. No one ever looks back at a draft and says, man, that guy's a really good player. But it would have been way better if they drafted him in the beginning of the second round instead of midway through the first round. Like, no one cares about that if you get a Hall of Fame or you get a great quarterback to come in and quarterback your team. So I think, you know, for Denver, you get a unique type of guy too, right? Bo Nix started for 3 years and then transferred and started for another 2 years. He started 5 years in college. I had to play, you know, I had to redshirt. I didn't play every year when I was in school. So this guy plays every year. He's played a lot of different snaps. He's played in different systems. So you get a guy that is mature. He's had a lot of game reps. We just talked about reps. Yes, they're not in the NFL. Yes, he has things to work on. But you get a guy that, because of COVID, has played just a lot of football at a high level. And then I just read it, the guy's married, so he should come in there mature, ready to go. So I think for this Denver team, for what they had in the locker room, you know, I got the opportunity to be around Jarrett Stidham from his time in New England. I think he's a great guy. He's a poised guy under pressure. I think he's going to do everything he can to go out there and compete against Bo Nix, but he's also going to be a good mentor to him. He's going to try to help him out. Stidham has been there. He's learned from Brian Hoyer, who Hoyer had got the opportunity to be around Brady. So he's heard a lot of the right things his whole career. So I think it's going to be a good fit for Bo Nix. And you can see his numbers there, just a progression. Like that's an NFL 5-year career where you play early, you get better, and then at the end, you're your best. So I know they're hoping that they can get a guy that can connect right away with Sean Payton, and they can go and run an offense to Sean Payton's liking and be productive that way.
And, Devin, we showed the reaction of Bo Nix when he got the phone call. He had to be extremely relieved because, look, I know that and every agent that represents these guys that are due to go in round one trying to figure out where the floor is. And there was a thought Bo Nix is not going to be taken in round one at all. Now, as we got closer to the draft, yeah, he's going to be the guy that somebody swoops in and takes late in the round, most likely, worst-case scenario. And then all of a sudden he goes 12th overall, higher than I think anybody thought he was going to go for the Broncos to stay put and not get cute. And, you know, the Ravens got cute 6 years ago, middle of the round. Steve Bisciotti, take Lamar Jackson. They take Hayden Hurst. They say, well, we'll still get Lamar. And they come back and pick 32 and get Lamar Jackson. But if they had blown that, I mean, who could, like, Hayden Hurst is on 2-3 teams since then. You should have just gone ahead and taken Lamar Jackson in the middle of the round. Yeah, hey, you were able to have this big celebration when he was still there, but that's a hell of a game to play. And you know, Sean Payton got burned 7 years ago in New Orleans when he was waiting for Patrick Mahomes to fall into his lap, and he got jumped by the Chiefs. That's why I'm saying if they would have wanted J.J. McCarthy, they would have moved up. That was the guy Sean Payton wanted, he would have moved up because he'd already been burned by staying put. And he wasn't going to get burned by sliding and getting jumped by somebody for Bo Nix because everybody kind of thought, yeah, that's what the Broncos are going to do, but not at 12. So he had to do it. And if he works out, they'll never say, man, we could have traded back and picked up an extra fourth round pick in 2025 if we had just done that. All right. Before we take a break, 6 quarterbacks taken in the top 12. Which guy, in your estimation, landed in the best spot? And I know you're going to say Drake May in New England because you still can't get that, you know, wiped off of your football DNA.
I wish so bad I could say Drake May, but Drake May is not a good landing spot of how you would want to start with the guys around him. I think it's back to what we talked about. I think it's J.J. McCarthy. I think, for one, having Kevin O'Connell, but also having Aaron Jones in the backfield. And you're a quarterback, you have no problem handing the ball off. Oh, yeah, you know what? If the pressure's coming and you come out there and Kevin O'Connell's going to tell him one thing, hey, if a team's crazy enough to leave J.J. backside, Justin Jefferson one-on-one, there's no read. You take this ball and you throw it backside to wherever he's going to be at. Oh, if they're going to double team him and Jordan Addison's in the slot or he's out wide on the other side, let's look to him. Oh, if they're going to double and go too high, two safeties high to take away our perimeter guys, we have TJ Hockenson inside to take advantage. Like, the guy has weapons everywhere, and he has a guy who draws it up just as good as anybody else week after week in this league. So I think McCarthy's going to get off to a great start. Ultimately, will he be the best quarterback? I don't know about that, but I think he gets off and has a good start. And I think, for me, the second guy would be Caleb Williams. I think Chicago has done a good job putting different pieces around them. Shane Waldron coming in. I just, like you said earlier, I think the worry is that might be 1 year for Caleb Williams. And now him and a new offensive coordinator is trying to connect and put the pieces together next year once Waldron's gone, probably being a head coach of another football team.
Yeah, I'm going to say McCarthy and Nix just because they both landed with head coaches who are going to run the offense and they're not going anywhere. If these guys thrive, the head coach will still be there and they will have continuity. And that is the way you get to and stay at your ceiling, because it's a progression. One year after another, you learn a little bit more, you get a little bit better. You learn a little bit more, you get a little bit better, and you never have that distraction of having to reset. New personality, new system, maybe new terminology, new this, new that. There's enough change that happens with an NFL team naturally. If you can have continuity with the play caller and play designer, you are ahead of the curve, especially if it's a play caller and a play designer who knows what he's doing, and Kevin O'Connell and Sean Payton fit that bill. Let's take a break. When we return, we'll take a look at the run on receivers that happened early and late, and what the hell are the Buffalo Bills thinking? We'll delve into that next here on PFT Live. There are the receivers taken in round one. As expected, it began with Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4, Malik Nabers to the Giants at 6. Roma Dunze finished the top 10 receivers at 9. Then there was a break to 23, Brian Thomas Jr. That was the guy Sims had at number 2 ahead of Marvin Harrison and behind Malik Nabers. And then the run at the end, which was bizarre because the Bills finally get on the clock at 28, Devin, and they trade out with their arch rivals, their non-division arch rivals, Kansas City, who need a fast receiver, especially with the Rashee Rice off-field issues. Xavier Worthy, the fastest guy ever at the scouting combine, goes 28. Ricky Pearsall, 31 to the 49ers, and the Bills trade down again, allowing the Panthers to come up and get Xavier Leggett. Bills will have the 33rd overall pick, first pick in round 2. We'll see what they do at the receiver position. We know they're going to do something at some point. But a lot of receivers last night, a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of receivers. People throwing passes, people catching passes.
And one of the biggest reasons why is the amount of money you got to pay these guys on these second contracts. I think teams are sitting there and was like, hey, if we can get these guys now, and, you know, I think that was a big thing with the Panthers coming back into round one. And was like, hey, if we can come get Leggett, who we think will be a special player for us, we can at least pick up his fifth-year option, and that's 5 years without us having to pay, who knows by then, $45 million. Like, who knows what this receiver market jumps up to. So I think these teams are trying to get ahead of the quarterback and receiver market, because even when you get a guy who you think is good, but you don't think he's like the upper echelon of top five in the NFL, you still got to pay him and put him at such a high mark that I think teams are realizing, like, let's get a guy on his rookie contract, see how much he can help us. But yeah, you see it, and you look at Jacksonville. Yeah, they lost Calvin Ridley, but they went and got Gabe Davis. Now they come back and get another receiver and Brian Thomas Jr. So all of these teams are, it's turning into, there's no amount of receivers that's too many receivers. You know, Chicago decides, hey, we got our quarterback. You know, some people were saying early on, well, let's go defense. You got your quarterback. You went and got Keenan Allen. You had DJ Moore, who had a big year last year. Cole Kmet has really stepped up and been a good player. And they're like, nope, let's get Caleb Williams all the help. No matter who he throws to, we're going to get Roma Dunze. So I think it's a big deal. I think because of the receiver market, I think if you can get these guys to play on rookie deals, and this year happened to be a year where a lot of scouts and teams believe there was a lot of good receivers in the draft. And I think Buffalo, I think, shocked everybody. I will say, I understand Buffalo. If you have a guy that you really love and you can get him in a second round, smart. But the one thing I'm not doing is I'm not going to say, hey, oh, hey, Kansas City, I know you're really good. I know you have the best quarterback in the NFL. Oh, I know you had a guy in Tyreek Hill that was pretty special, what you had down here. Come up, take our pick, and go get Worthy, and now have a chance. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to take a team that has really been the reason that we haven't played in the Super Bowl in this era right now and say, here's an opportunity to go get better. Have at it. Like, I just would not do that. And I get it. You know, even, you know, people were saying yesterday, you got to focus on your team in the draft, but you gotta at least look out your side mirror a little bit and say, hey, that team, let's not make them better.
And that seems like it doesn't get considered. It's all about who we're getting, what extra assets we can get, and it doesn't matter who we're giving that pick to, and if they're going to end up getting somebody that's going to be a thorn in our side and make it harder for us to do what we're trying to do. I'm with you all the way. And, of course, we never know the full details about what's going on behind the scenes. Was there someone else that was trying to trade up to 28, offering a little bit less than the Chiefs were offering? But, you know, I'd rather see Xavier Worthy on that team than on the Chiefs. And I guess they just don't do it at all, because once you start down that path, you drive yourself crazy. You got enough to worry about trying to figure out the board, trying to best position yourself. But I am surprised there's this kind of nonchalance, like, yeah, go ahead. Like with the Vikings a couple years ago, handed Jameson Williams to the Lions, trading out. Sure, take a guy who could become a game-breaking receiver. We don't have any problem with that until we play him. We don't play him for a few more months, so we won't worry about that for now. One thing I heard last night, and this is one of those that, and I can't get into the details of how I heard it, but it's one of those things that's so much of a curveball that I have a hard time dismissing it. Apparently last night, and I haven't nailed this down yet, I haven't written about it on PFT. I mentioned it last night in the video that I did after the Chargers made the pick of Joe Alt at number 5. Apparently the Vikings were trying to get the number 5 last night. And apparently there were some folks with the Chargers that would have preferred to take the deal. This is, you know, I'm hearing this and I'm like, it's too specific enough and it's too random enough to not at least make me say this is interesting. The way I hear it, the Vikings were trying to get the 5 to get Malik Nabers, which if that would have happened, think about that. They got Justin Jefferson. They got Jordan Addison. What are they doing trading up to 5 to get Malik Nabers? And what about the need for quarterback that they supposedly had? And what were they trying to trade to get to number 5? But that to me was a whoa, this is interesting. But it speaks to your point. We've got this, it's almost like quarterback and running back came together and made the receiver market, where you've got, you know, a handful of guys that make a lot of money, and then it's interchangeable after that. So why am I going to pay Brandon Ayuk $25 million a year in new money when I can draft Ricky Pearsall and see what he can do and pay him a hell of a lot less? And that's where I think these teams are going. Instead of making the huge financial commitment to an older receiver, let's get a young guy, let's see what he becomes, and then we'll make a decision as to whether or not we're going to give him a second contract. And, you know, the Vikings trade Stephon Diggs and fall into Justin Jefferson. And I just wonder, and that's the next step for the Vikings in all this. Are they good? Because they keep dragging their feet. A.J. Brown got a big contract last night. The Eagles staying ahead of the curve because it's never going to get cheaper. And if you've got these guys that are due for second or third contracts, the longer you wait, the more expensive it's going to be. And, you know, this Jefferson thing is still floating out there. Until the Vikings sign him, his future is still kind of cloudy. He's going to get a massive deal. Other guys are going to get big deals. And other teams are just going to say, we're going to throw a dart and draft receivers. And maybe the Vikings were trying to get Malik Nabers last night. Maybe they weren't. But this is part of the thought process now. We can get a great player who can come in and pay him a lot less money, and we can make him thrive in our offense.
Yeah, and it's interesting because some of these teams you look at and the receivers are making a ton of money, but it's not impacting the team enough that they're in the last game of the year. You're not seeing that. Yeah, you go down to Miami, all the money Tyreek Hill's making. You look at Devontae Adams, all the money he's making for the Raiders. Like, these guys deserve every last dime. They're game changers. They're making plays. They're living up to the contract. But it doesn't equal team success. And I think that's my biggest thing. When you look at your roster, you want to have a roster that's a really good roster. You want to have game-changing players, but you also want to be able to compete in the last game of the year. And I know Kansas City has the one advantage that no one else has is Mahomes. But it's also like you look at Kansas City and you're like, they don't have any of these guys other than Travis Kelce, who's really in the market at tight end. It's not like they're paying him way over every other tight end, but they're still winning games and they're doing what everybody else wants to do. So I see that. I kind of like the philosophy. Get these young receivers, figure it out. I think Justin Jefferson is a little bit different. I think he's one for me. He's the guy that I think is above every other receiver in the NFL. But I think for Minnesota, you have to decide, is this roster good enough to go win a Super Bowl once we pay this guy, or are we just going to have a really good player and never really get to where we want to get to? I think that's the question you have to ask yourself when you're trying to build a team. Yes, that guy's really good, but the ultimate thing is we want to build a team that can win a Super Bowl, and there's all different pieces that have to go into that, and you have to think about that before you just cough out a contract that might not allow you to build the rest of your team in a way that you're going to have success. So like you said, credit to Philadelphia. They keep jumping ahead of the curve and trying to create a team and not have these issues show up in training camp where now a guy's in there, he's running, he's working out, but he's not really practicing, which becomes a distraction.
And that's where a receiver becomes like running back. The fans get so caught up in the fantasy football potential. The guy's scoring touchdowns. He's creating excitement. We got to keep him. We got to keep him. We got to keep him. And the team's like, yeah, but we got others. We'll find somebody else. And it's been that way with running back for the past 15 years or so. Yeah. And now I think it's going to be that way with receiver. We'll find somebody else, and there's someone else you'll fall in love with, and you'll buy his jersey until we trade him or he moves on, and then we'll find somebody else after that, and you can buy another jersey. All right, let's take a break. When we return, it took 15 picks, but defensive players were indeed drafted last night. Contrary to popular opinion, there were defensive players taken last night. We will break down some of the best who made it off the board in the second half of the round when PFT Live continues right after this.
Down two.
Chris, hello.
How you doing, man? It's Chris Ballard with the Colts.
I'm doing great. How about you, sir?
Good, man. Welcome to Indy. We're going to pick you right here. We're excited to get you, man.
What?
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, no, man. We
I'm ready to roll.
Absolutely. You're gonna help us, man. We've been dialed on this for a while, man, so can't be more excited to get you here, man. You're gonna help. We got a really good front. You're gonna add fuel right to the fire, man.
They tell me that's Chris Ballard. It's like Chris Ballard is an actor who's like transformed his entire look for his latest role. Isn't that what it looked like to you? Long hair, put on weight. Like, who's he playing? What movie is he going to be in?
When I first saw him, I was like, who is that? And it was like Chris Ballard. I'm like, oh, that is Chris Ballard.
Yeah, he's getting ready. He's getting ready for some role in some movie, and we'll find out when the movie comes out in a couple of years. All right, we're going to find out sooner than that what they have in Leatu Latu, 15th overall pick. Regarded as one of the top pass rushers in the draft, the first defensive player taken. That's the good news. Hey, Leatu Latu, you're going to be the first defensive player taken in the draft. All right, what am I, third, right? Fourth? No, 15th. Sorry, you're number 15. And that's what finally started. It went 15, 16, 17. There were 4 and 5 picks after Latu. But, Latu's a guy on the edge, not a big body, but one of those guys get around the edge, has the bend, has the leverage, get to the quarterback. You need to be in the AFC South now with Trevor Lawrence and Will Levis and C.J. Stroud. You better be able to get to the quarterback.
And Latu was interesting because last night, once he got drafted, Coach Belichick, he had all of these breakdowns. And it was so funny watching it last night because it brought all of the former players that played for him back to our team meetings. Because, you know, usually the draft night is the guy gets drafted. We watch like 5 or 6 highlight plays and maybe somebody mentions one thing they could do better. Coach Belichick had like 2 or 3 good plays, and then he had these plays where it was like, this is what the guy can do and get better. And what I thought was interesting is Latu gets drafted and they keep calling him edge, and Bill jumps on and goes, what the hell is an edge? What is an edge? The edge of what? Well, why do you guys keep calling these players edges? He was like, this guy can play defensive end. He said, but he also plays defensive tackle, and he comes on and he shows this guy down in what we call the 3 technique. He's on the edge of the offensive tackle, and he's taking on guards. He's holding his ground. He's throwing guys out of the way, and he can play the run too. And I think that's one of the key things is this guy can play everywhere. And then you put him next to Buckner, and you know, they can maybe switch. They can do different things up front. But I think his ability to get after the passer, what you just said, and the ability not to just get after the passer on the edge, but also in their scheme, using them different places. That's why Michael Bennett was such a problem when he was a player, was he can rush you from the edge. He can rush you inside that 3 technique. And it's the same thing when we watch Chris Jones in Kansas City and Aaron Donald before he retired this year for the Rams, is these guys have great versatility. And that's some of my favorite players on the defensive line. Because if you're going to put a high pick or you're going to pay a guy a lot of money, you want that there's nothing a team can do to kind of make this guy irrelevant in the game. And when you watch these guys that can line up inside and beat guards with quickness, but also if you're going to try to slide to them and the guard and center is going to take them away, then you're going to just line them up on the edge. And now when you're on the edge, you're going to say, hey, either use that tight end and we take him out of the game to help, or the running back. So I think Latu is going to be able to be a dangerous player for Indianapolis, and it should help them out a lot.
Hey, you mentioned Michael Bennett. It gives me flashbacks to Super Bowl 49 when Belichick knew he was the guy that could screw up everything. And he had that element, the F up the play, as Sim said.
We talked about it every day, that whole week.
Yep. The Seahawks, the team that had Michael Bennett in Super Bowl 49, had to have been thrilled to have Byron Murphy fall to them. That's a guy Sims loves. We met him at the scouting combine. He's huge. He said, I came out swole. And he's one of those guys that you put in the interior of the defensive line who just will create havoc. Aaron Donald is gone. Somebody's got to be the heir to that throne. And not that, you know, too early to compare Murphy to Aaron Donald, but he's got the potential to be that guy that's just kind of throwing bodies everywhere and keeping an offense from doing whatever it's trying to do.
Listen, this was the same team we watched when they played against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we were just watching, you know, whether it was Jalen Warren or it was Najee Harris, they were just having these runs where they're running over people, running through people. It was just hand the ball off and go. So, yeah, when you put a guy like Byron Murphy in the middle of your defense and he's able to just take other grown men and make them look like little boys, you have to be excited about that. And I think especially, you know, we keep talking about all these offensive-minded coaches are going to be there for years. You get Mike McDonald to go down there, and he's in Seattle now. He wants a good defense. And I think this Seattle culture, even though Sherman and Cam Chancellor are not fans of taking down some of the Legion of Boom and some of the things they were able to do, taking those pictures and stuff down, I think this shows that McDonald's invested in bringing that culture a little bit back to Seattle, having a great defense, going out there winning games because you're punching people in the mouth. And I think when you're able to bring that mentality in and you're going to have your first pick under your era, and you bring a guy like Byron Murphy in, it sets the tone for the team. It allows them to say, all right, we're going to have a guy in here that's going to be an animal. And, you know, last year they had a chance to get Jalen Carter, and they didn't. He goes to Philly, and I know his season didn't end as well as it started with his ability and just moving people around. But I think they said, you know what, we're going to take this guy that we can set in the middle of our defense, and it could be a problem for years.
All right, we got to take a break. More PFT Live right after this.
You know, I know the question is going to come up, and you're going to say, like, you know, what about a weapon? What about a offensive linemen? We look at as weapons. That group, when we talk about attacking, and we talk about attacking on offense. Offensive line is the tip of the spear.
Jim Harbaugh at the league meetings in March went on and on about the importance of offensive line. And look, offensive linemen get overlooked all the time. When they're doing their job, we don't pay attention to them. They're only noticeable when they're not doing their job. You need an offensive line that can get it done so everybody else can do the things that everyone loves to see: running the ball, throwing the ball, catching the ball, scoring touchdowns, winning games. And Joe Alt, a mountain of a man with an NFL pedigree, with a brother who played in the NHL, and I interviewed him last week, he learned some things from his brother that he could translate to professional football, although he's not going to be out there literally with the weapon that is a hockey stick. That would probably be a violation of the rules. But still, Alt was the guy that the Chargers wanted. I mentioned earlier they had opportunity to trade down. Harbaugh wanted to stay firm and take Alt and improve that offensive line.
Yeah, and I think it fits to what Jim Harbaugh is trying to do. He wants to be able to be a physical football team, wants to be able to run the ball. So I think for the Chargers, and I think especially he knows what he's walking into. He's walking into a team that over the last few years, all we've talked about is they don't run the ball enough. They got to run the ball. So he's letting people know, like, hey, we're going to go get Joe Alt. And I think they're going to continue to push towards having a stronger run game that helps ultimately Justin Herbert. So, you know, Alt seemed like one of those guys. I think you just said it. He has the pedigree. He has all of that. He was one of those guys in the draft that You didn't hear much about him. No one really talked, because it was like, this is a shoo-in. Whoever gets this guy, you're going to get a left tackle that's going to be a really good football player. He's going to be one of those guys that you know is going to be a mainstay. He's going to be over there. He's going to protect the blind side. He's going to move people. He's going to do all of those things. He was like one of those shoo-in prospects that you didn't really have to talk about, but maybe this, maybe that. So I think for the Chargers, getting a guy like that is not flashy, it's not sexy, but it makes you a better football team. And offensive linemen have one of the better success rates of being drafted in the first round and going out there and playing, because usually those guys have the skill set, they have everything they need, and usually they don't require somebody else having to be good for them to be good. So I think this is a great pick for them, and bringing Joe Alton and setting the tone for this team.
And that's the key: high success rate, and where else do you find great offensive linemen? They are hard to find. Top of the draft, especially tackles, is where you look. Six tackles taken in the first 20 picks. And this is one of the feel-good stories because, look, I'm firmly on record. I think it would be great. I think it would be better, not that it's ever going to happen, if the players coming into the NFL got to pick their teams like they get to pick their colleges. Troy Faltanu of the University of Washington ended up with the Pittsburgh Steelers, the team that he grew up rooting for. Favorite player, Troy Polamalu, as he was growing up, and this is going to help the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Awesome.
You've got Russell Wilson and Justin Fields back there. Need that offensive line to be better, and they devote the pick to a tackle. Let's take a break. We're going to wrap things up right after this. How about this from 14 years ago? Somebody's on the phone with Jason McCourty. By the time it gets to Bill, it is Devin McCourty. First round pick. There's Robert Kraft talking to Jason. Little did he know he wasn't speaking to Devin McCourty. He actually was tampering with Jason McCourty, who at the time was under contract with an entirely different football team. There's the announcement. There's Devin. Look at that. Oh, my gosh. You have hardly changed in 14 years except for the hair.
Yeah, I lost my hair, man. Back then, that hair was a big difference, though. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. But that's a nice suit that kid got on. Look at him.
Well, you guys are ready to go. Hey, they treat the first-round picks right. And you ended up being there, what, 13 years as a player? You'll be in the Patriots Hall of Fame before too long. Super Bowl rings. Worked out pretty well. Every guy drafted last night can only hope they have a career like the one you had.
Yeah, well, hopefully a little bit better. Hopefully they can go and win four Super Bowls. That would make it a little bit better. But that was a fun time, man. I still remember that like it was yesterday. The media called me a special teams player and a disappointing first-round pick. Welcome to New England.
I hope it wasn't me. I hope I didn't. No. I'm always careful, though. I mean, you know, I everything's glass half full in the draft. But you don't want to be the guy who said this guy's going to stink and then he ends up being a Hall of Famer. Nobody knows. That's part of the fun of it. Nobody knows until you get to the NFL. All right, Devin, great stuff today. Everybody, enjoy the rest of the draft. We'll see you on Monday.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.